truth seekers from coast to coast and around the globe. You are listening to the Mike Malloy Show, or as I've decided to call it, the MMS. No, that's probably not a good idea, is it? No. No cocaine and hookers here. Hey, welcome, truth seekers, to the show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for you this week. Broadcasting live from beautiful downtown Burbank. Television City. Tony, is this Television City? Do you know? Is this? Beautiful downtown Burbank in Television City. You remember that? You're too young. You don't even know what that refers to, do you? It's a little laugh-in humor. Do you know what laugh-in is? You do? Okay. Anyway, sitting in for Mike Malloy this week, all week long. Glad you could join us. He is off. He and Kathy and Molly are enjoying some much-needed summer vacation. Hope you're having fun this summer as well. So far, I know I am not. But now that I'm here, maybe I will be. That's right, it's me, your friendly citizen, investigative, journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker from bradblog.com, where there is now a live chat room underway. You can stop on by there. I try my best to keep my eyes on the chat room. We'll see how I do. You can go to bradblog.com, go to the first item, and click through, and you'll find the chat room, and say hello to our lovely chat hostesses tonight. Jeannie Dean and Desi Doyen is in there. She's going to be joining me here in a minute. Of course, we're going to talk about, well, you know, it's the lazy, hazy days of summer. Congress is on recess. So there's really not much going on, not much to talk about. Yet, we've got 3 hours, so we're going to come up with something. There is something to talk about. Bibi Netanyahu visited the White House today. Prime Minister of Israel, and I don't care. Couldn't care in the least. Couldn't be less interested. Maybe you are, but if you are, you can give us a call, although not until the third hour. We're going to leave the whole third hour open, if I can, for open lines. Our number this week only, don't bother the Malloys, call us here at the beautiful K-Talk AM 1150 studios in Burbank. 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. So, no, we're not going to talk about Israel today unless you want to later on. Then there's this. Obama administration is planning to sue Arizona to overturn the new Papers, Please immigration law. And I don't care about that either. What do you think? Why? Because I think the whole immigration mess is a phony issue. I couldn't care less about it. It's a phony issue. It's a right-wing issue. It's made. It's completely made up to get people angry so they show up at the polls. At least that's what I think. Again, you can tell me if you disagree. Unlike Mike, I do welcome, I was going to say wingnut callers, but that won't bring them in, will it? I welcome people who disagree with me, and you can get me on that also in the third hour. No. Today we're going to cover what really matters. Real news, news you won't hear anywhere else. The L.A. County Superior Court has found Lindsay Lohan in contempt of court, and she'll be sentenced to 90 days. We are going to be covering the Lindsay Lohan story from every angle, live from the courthouse, analysis that you can't find anywhere else for the next 3 hours only, right here on the MMS. No, we're not going to cover that either. We are going to cover stuff that matters amongst things that matter. Oh, yeah, there is this oil gusher still going on in the Gulf, no matter how much the media may be bored with it. It's still important, so we are going to cover it. I am going to be joined by my lovely co-host, Desi Doyen, co-host of the Green News Report, heard on many fine progressive radio stations. If it's not heard on yours, I would complain. She'll be joining me in a moment to chat about the latest there. And then Ernest Canning will also be joining us, California attorney and guest contributor at the Brad Blog. He'll be joining us to talk about the moratorium that was overturned by this judge down there in Louisiana, Martin Feldman, and whether he ought to be impeached. Judge Feldman, not Ernie Canning. A little bit later, Vic Rawl, that's Judge Vic Rawl, will be joining us. He of the U.S. Senate race, Democratic U.S. Senate primary in South Carolina, who was defeated by unknown jobless candidate Alvin Green, the guy that nobody has ever heard of, who somehow managed to beat Judge Vic Rahl, a four-term state legislator, former circuit judge, out there for the Democratic nomination to the U.S. Senate in South Carolina on June 8th, for reasons that so far can only be attributed to the 100% unverifiable voting machines that they use in South Carolina and in dozens of states around the country. Speaking of media who doesn't care. So we're going to talk with Vic Rahl here live tonight from South Carolina. A whole lot more. What else do I have to take care of here? Let me take a quick break. Oh, did I give the number? I did give the number. 877-520-1150. You can also tweet me if you like at The Brad Blog. That's my Twitter name. And if I don't get more than 50 new followers by the end of tonight, I quit. That's what I say. I'm going to keep my eyes on there. You can comment us there as well. I'll keep my eyes on all of it. All right. See, Tony, I'm getting out quick. We're going to get out. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with all the new BP news. And there's a lot of it that folks just aren't talking about out there for some reason. Why? Because it's summer and because they got to go off and barbecue. And the fact that there's 100,000 barrels a day, as much as 100,000 barrels a day, leaking into the Gulf of Mexico, rolling up as tar balls now in the state of Texas, as well as Lake Pontchartrain in Louisiana. Now all Gulf states have been hit in some fashion by this oil disaster. And Tony found a BP oil spill game. A real one. Really. We'll talk about all of that and much more straight ahead. Brad Friedman in for Malloy, feeling much better today. Thank you. You're listening to the Malloy Program. Much more straight ahead. Stay with us. Yes, there is. We got your cure right here for the Summertime Blues. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike Malloy tonight and all week long. Broadcasting live from beautiful downtown Burbank. Going to be joined shortly here by Ernest Canning to talk about Judge Feldman, the moratorium judge, the notorious moratorium. Notorious. Got to come up with a rap name for him and his conflicts of interest and whether he ought to be impeached. I am joined, however, momentarily by my lovely co-host of the Green News Report, Desi Doyen, joins us. Hey, Des.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going okay. Well, you tell me. We're doing all right so far?
Yeah, you're doing great so far. The first 17 minutes are awesome.
They were good, weren't they?
Yeah.
I thought so. Desi is, of course, my co-host and the managing editor of the Green News Report, heard, as I said, on many fine progressive radio stations. 6 minutes of independent green news politics analysis and snarky comment. And if you don't get it, then you don't get it. Call and bitch to your local programming manager. That's what I recommend.
Nicely.
What?
Bitch nicely, I guess, okay. Would be the word to say.
Yes. All right. You're right. Please ask them nicely.
Yes.
Yeah, you can say that. That's all okay. Right. That's all right. all right. So I wanted to actually get an update here since most of the media doesn't seem to care anymore about the BP oil spill. And, oh, it's only, what, 60,000 gallons? No, 60,000 barrels a day.
Right. 60,000 barrels a day, which means that
or maybe 100,000.
It could be as much as that. Yes.
Should we take BP's word for it? That it's,
I don't think anybody's taking BP's word for it, but it is kind of shocking that they still haven't figured out exactly how much is coming out of there.
And they can.
They apparently have the technology, but until we actually, you know, get a cap that allows them to collect all the oil that's mm-hmm. coming out, which we may never get, then they'll be able to say, oh, look, this is how much we have going into the tanker. Now we know exactly how much it is.
I thought that they had bragged in one of their annual reports about the fact that they were able to track this down to the liter, down to the spoonful of how much oil comes out of these wells. If that was the case years ago when they were bragging about it, were they lying then, or are they lying now, Desi Doyen?
How about both?
BP lying?
Shocker.
We're going to get so sued. All right, here's some news today coming from Think Progress. Has a couple of BP-related items I wanted to run through here. BP used oil industry tax breaks to write off its rent for the failed deepwater rig. Reports continue to demonstrate how deeply unprepared BP was to deal with its disaster in the Gulf of Mexico, with tar balls reaching Texas and entering Louisiana's Lake Pontchartrain. But the New York Times now explains how the oil behemoth took advantage of U.S. tax policies to significantly benefit from the failed Deepwater Horizon rig. Transocean, the company that owns the rig, used well-known tax havens in the Cayman Islands and Switzerland to reduce its U.S. corporate tax rate by almost 15%. Well, I'm glad, because, you know, the oil game, it's tough to make a profit in the oil game.
It's,
isn't it?
Yes, it's a terribly, terribly difficult,
it's very
expensive.
And due to a break in the U.S. tax code, BP was then allowed to write off 70% of the rent that it paid to Transocean on its own tax bill. According to a letter sent in June to the Senate Finance Committee, the benefit amounted to a deduction of more than $225,000 a day since the lease began. As the Wonk Room's Pat Garofalo writes, quote, essentially, the U.S. taxpayer paid BP to lease a rig that was incorporated in a foreign country for the purposes of avoiding the U.S. corporate tax. This is the tax code we have. And this, by the way, is on top of all the other subsidies that the fossil fuel industry gets, that the oil industry gets. Remember, this is an industry, BP, made $20 billion in profit over each of the last 3 years. ExxonMobil made what was their what are they? They're the big
ones. I think it was $45 billion per quarter.
$45 billion per quarter.
Yeah.
Other than that, let's give them some more corporate welfare. Brilliant. In the meantime, what did Obama announce over the weekend? $2 billion to the
$2 billion, a whole $2 billion with a B for solar thermal plants to be built in the deserts of Arizona.
Now, we're delighted about solar thermal plants, new renewable energy.
Yeah,
and
it's kind
and
of a no-brainer,
things.
You know, yeah. Free money falling from the sky, essentially.
Yeah.
Let's go catch it.
Wait, you're talking about the tax breaks or the...
No, I'm talking about the solar energy
falling
from the sky. That's the energy that, you know, that it's kind of free and you can run stuff off of it.
So, we're glad that Obama
is
trying something to get this to get this going, at least until we get clean energy legislation if that ever happens. But so this is a good thing. But it's $2 billion. It's nothing. BP makes this in an afternoon.
Well, we already know that in an analysis that came out, I think it was in the fall, a report showed that of the billions in tax subsidies and incentives that go to the renewable energy industry, they measured between 2002 and 2008 that the renewable energy industry got $29 billion. However, during that same period of time, the fossil fuel industry got $72 billion.
Of course it did. And they're doing a great job with it, by the way. This benefit to BP, the fact that the U.S. taxpayer is essentially paying BP to lease this rig, this is a symptom of a larger issue, writes Pat Garofalo at Wonk Room. Garofalo explains that, quote, the U.S. tax code is actually riddled with breaks for the oil industry despite the industry's record profits in recent years. Seema Gandhi, a senior policy analyst for the Center for American Progress, has counted 9 different subsidies that the U.S. government gives to the oil industries, including refunds for drilling costs and refunds to cover the cost of searching for oil. Last month, only 35 senators voted for eliminating $35 billion of the industry's subsidies. Fully cutting the corporate welfare would save, this particular corporate welfare would save $45 billion per year, and according to the Office of Economic Policy at the Department of Treasury, affect domestic production by less than one-half of 1%. The flow of revenues to oil companies is like the gusher at the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico. Heavy and constant, said Senator Robert Menendez, Democrat of New Jersey. This is in response to BP's Deepwater write-off. Quote, there is no reason for these corporations to shortchange the American taxpayer. There is no reason, is there? But they do it. And they get away with it. And then you got these teabaggers out there complaining that, oh, we don't have enough money, oh, there's a deficit, but let's keep giving these free money to these oil companies, to these coal companies who don't need it, who kill people in the bargain, and oh, yeah, let's keep that trillion-dollar war going. Where could we possibly cut the budget, Des?
Got no answer for
you. You got no
there.
One? Huh? You stop the wars, you stop the free money to the corporate welfare queens like BP, ExxonMobil, and what's his name, Massey.
Right, how's that going so far?
Yeah, which one? How's it?
Any of them.
Any of them? Yeah, it's not going, is it? They're not doing it. They're acting like we got no money, we can't pause. Let's cut social services. That's what we have to do. God forbid we should cut the Pentagon budget. All right, do I have any time for any more of these? No? No time? All right, well, maybe in the third hour. You want to come back in third hour?
Sure.
All right. Who's going to answer the phones then? That's what I thought. Well, let's see. Well, just real quickly, BP has skimmed or burned about 60% of the amount that it promised regulators it could remove in a single day. So they lied. The Defense Department has kept up its immense purchases of aviation fuel and other petroleum products from BP nonetheless. And the federal agency charged with protecting endangered species signed off on the Minerals Management Service's conclusion that deepwater drilling for oil in the Gulf of Mexico posed no significant risk to wildlife. Heck of a job, MMS. This is the Mike Malloy Show, the MMS. I'm in for Mike. Back right after this. Four minutes after the hour here on the Mike Malloy program. You can keep it cranking there, Tone. In case anybody's wondering, by the way, Tony Sorrentino, he's the guy. We get a lot of comments, Tony, that people want to know who does the music when we're sitting in. That would be Tony. Every now and again, he'll take an idea of mine. Mostly he just vetoes them and plays what he wants anyway. And it rocks. Thank you, brother. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike. You can call us here at the program at 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. We're talking about oil and all the crimes involved. And to that end, I am joined by Ernest Canning. He's a active member of the California State Bar since 1977. He's received both an undergraduate and graduate degrees in political science, as well as a Juris Doctor. He's a Vietnam vet. 4th Infantry, Central Highlands, 1968. And most prestigiously, of course, he is now an important guest contributing blogger at bradblog.com. Hey, Ernie.
Hey, how you doing, Brad?
Welcome to the Mike Malloy program, my friend.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I know we need to give you a title. Perhaps you should be senior Bradblog's senior legal analyst. How does that work?
Anything with Bradblog on it sounds good to me.
You're very kind. I'll take it. All right, you've covered you cover a lot of important stories, and I want to recommend folks read your stuff whenever they see your name pop up at Bradblog. But of late, you've been taking a look at the case for impeachment against Judge Martin Feldman. This is the guy, this is the judge, the federal judge down there in Louisiana who overturned the moratorium that they put in place after the oil disaster down there. And let's be clear, Ernie, this is 33 exploratory wells that they're talking about shutting down momentarily for 6 months and out of how many in the Gulf? It's more than 3,000.
Actually, I think the number's higher. I was looking at the the government's brief today that they filed in the Court of Appeal to get an emergency stay. And let's see, I think they said it was 33 out of 3,600 structures in the Gulf dedicated to offshore oil exploration.
So 3,600, and they put a temporary moratorium on 33 of them. Bobby Jindal, the Republicans down there, are freaking out. Oh, we can't shut them down. It's going to be, I heard Newt Gingrich say, it's going to cost 80,000 jobs. For these three, that's a lot of people working on each of those.
Well, Jindal actually intervened in the case, asking to file a brief on behalf of the plaintiffs in the case to prevent the moratorium from going through.
Well, that's right. And so we've got this suit, and about 2 weeks ago, I think it was now, Judge Martin Feldman, not Marty Feldman, not the famous...
not the comedian.
Right. This guy, this judge, not funny at all. Not like Marty Feldman. Anyway, so he overturns this moratorium. What before we talk about his conflict of interest and whether he ought to be impeached, on what basis, Ernie Canning, did he overturn this moratorium in the first place?
Well, he used the language that is required by the Administrative Procedures Act that he can only overturn the decision if the department had abused its discretion. Whether the facts were there to justify that is a major bone of contention that is involved. In fact, I have a new piece I'm drafting based on what was really a powerful brief by the government, basically saying that it was Judge Feldman who abused his discretion.
So he's making the claim that the government abused their discretion to shut down these?
Specifically the department, and some of the things that he has done, like he stepped in and said that a 7.5% failure rate of, let me see if I can see what the precise item is that they were talking about in the brief, because that wasn't part of what I covered in the previous one, but a 7.5% failure rate in the blowout preventers did not justify the moratorium. And what the government is saying is that he basically has substituted his own personal judgment for the judgment that Congress basically gave to the Department of Interior and the various agencies that they have to make these types of safety decisions.
So let me understand the way the chain of custody here, if you will. Congress makes the law giving the Interior Department the right to make certain decisions in regulating the way the drilling is done in the Gulf.
And yeah, it's called the Outer Continental Shelf Lands Act,
okay,
and which describes the OCS or Outer Shelf as a vital national resource. And basically, you have that, and you have regulations that are adopted by the agencies that are designed to protect safety. And in fact, in the brief that was filed by the government, it said that Congress expected drilling operations would employ technology precautions and techniques sufficient to prevent or minimize the likelihood of blowouts, loss of well control, fire, spillage, and other occurrences that may cause damage to the environment or to property.
And so this is given to the Interior Department. They have the power to make these decisions, to make sure that these regulations are being met. Correct?
Right. And in fact, what a court is only allowed to do is overturn this if the agency charged with it had acted in an arbitrary, capricious abuse of discretion or otherwise not in accordance with law. And the reviewing court only examines what the agency decision is based on, whether or not there's a rational relationship between the decision by the agency and the danger to be dealt with. And so, the government's basically put together a pretty substantial argument and lays out a lot of things that that in the government's brief, they lay out a lot of things that Judge Feldman ignored. He relied on this safety study, but ignored a declaration and other items that were placed before him would provide the scientific support for what they did.
Okay, well, this I don't want to get ahead of us here because I want to. This is their brief for their upcoming hearing now, where they're appealing this this verdict on Thursday.
Hearing is on Thursday front of a three-judge panel.
Let me get to that then in a moment, because I want to focus on Feldman here. We've got a case where the plaintiffs, of course, have a right to redress the government and any regulation that they think is out of line or, as Feldman ruled, abusing their discretion. So they bring this case. Feldman looks at it, and he says that they abused their discretion. Now, on what basis did Feldman make this judgment?
Well, that would take me to read through one line after another decision, because I think that the basis for Feldman's decision, although he's claiming that the Department of Interior acted arbitrarily, Feldman's decision is pretty arbitrary. And what's really troubling is the timing on all this, because the case is filed on June 8th. June 8th, he makes his first order in the case, so you know that the case was assigned to him by then. The motion for a preliminary injunction, which they have to show extraordinary circumstances to get relief, that's filed on the 9th, and on the 11th, Judge Feldman shortens the time for a hearing on that motion. It was supposed to be on June 28th. He shortens the time to June 21, which gives the government very little time to not only get in their responsive papers, but since we're talking about a preliminary injunction, it's to get their evidence before the court. So that in itself is disturbing, is that he had, on such a case of this magnitude, had given the government such a short time to respond. And the hearing takes place on the 21st on the motion, and the very next morning, which is the morning he's drafting his decision on the case, he unloads his Exxon stock, where Exxon happened to own one of the rigs that was at issue here.
Right. And he says, so that's the hearing itself on the case, on the merits of the case, was June 21st. His verdict is read on June 22nd, correct?
Not a verdict, a ruling.
I'm sorry, you're right, the ruling.
Yeah.
And yet he puts out then these new financial disclosures where he says the Exxon stock that he owned was sold at the opening of the stock market on June 22, 2010, prior to the opening of a court hearing on the oil spill moratorium case. This was his disclosure, and we're all supposed to think, well, before he made the decision, before he had the hearing on this case, he unloaded these ExxonMobil stocks, so everything was fine.
Well, from my perspective, Brad, and, I haven't really heard that from some of the other people like John Dean, who appeared on Rachel Maddow, saying, you know, they were basically, in fact, it looked like John Dean was misled by that, but what bothers me most about this case is not just the conflict of interest, it's that that statement is so deceptive, because all the pertinent hearings had already occurred before he unloads the stock. The only thing left for him to do on the 22nd is to draft his decision, and if there's a hearing, to have the parties come in so he can read his decision. So he already knew that he was arriving at a decision. In fact, what troubles me is that the entire sequence of events of how quick everything happened and his refusing to allow the hearing to proceed in the normal course suggests that he had a decision in mind from day one and got to that decision. And then as he's doing it, he goes, oh my God, I guess I better unload this.
Yeah, and well.
But to put in his declaration that it's before a hearing is deceptive, because all the pertinent hearings had already been completed. And for a federal judge to actually be misleading basically his own court administrator by amending his financial declaration is very troubling.
We're going to we're speaking with attorney Ernest Canning, contributor to Brad Blog, and well, I want to ask you. We're going to take a quick break here, Ernie, but when we come back, I want to ask. Look, he unloaded the stock. Does it matter when? Obviously, he wouldn't have made money on it because he sold it. So there's nothing to worry about here, right? Don't answer yet. We'll get your answer after the break, and we'll find out whether this is an impeachable offense and if anybody's doing anything about it. You're listening to Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy, speaking with Ernie Canning. Taking a quick break here. Live, we'll be with you all night. Vic Rawl, by the way, coming up after the top of the hour. Stick with us.
Don't be afraid to care. Leave, but don't leave me.
The court's in session. The court's in session. Now, here come the judge. Here come the judge.
Here come the judge.
Yeah, it's our second laughing reference in a single Mike Malloy show. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy, speaking with attorney Ernest Canning about this Judge Martin Feldman, who overturned the deepwater drilling moratorium. Had some pretty serious conflicts of interests, it seems to me. There's going to be a hearing coming up Thursday, I believe, where the government is appealing this crazy decision. We're talking again about 33 exploratory platforms out of some 3,600 that are still operational out there in the Gulf. And I had referenced Newt Gingrich, who had claimed that 80,000 jobs were going to be lost by these 33 rigs being shut down for 6 months. He was on the Bill O'Reilly show actually saying that. I don't have the audio, but and don't trust me. Go look it up. You'll see. Mary comments in the BradBlog.com chat room that API is claiming 1,400 jobs per rig. And then it's about and it's about 100 to 400 people actually on the rig, says Mary. The rest of the exaggerated figures are onshore jobs, and that's 46,200 total if you multiply 1,400 by 33, if you buy into the notion that it's 700 jobs onshore for each rig, which she says she don't buy. That still doesn't get us to the 80,000 that Newt Gingrich is lying about on Fox News. Also, speaking of liars and clueless yutzes, Boehner, John Boehner, the senior, the majority leader in the U.S. House, said, well, yeah, we should have a pause in drilling, but not, we shouldn't shut down, we should only shut down the deep water sites for a while. That's what the moratorium is. This guy, this jackass doesn't even, he would be the Speaker of the House if the Republicans take over the House this November, and he doesn't even understand this moratorium that he's out speaking against. Okay, Ernie, before we took this break, Judge Feldman, before he overturned this decision, he had, he sold his stock. Before he overturned the moratorium, he sold the stock on the morning that he announced his ruling in this case. So he sold the ExxonMobil stock. Conflict of interest done, right?
No.
No?
No.
Why not?
First off, that's only one of the conflicts that he had. At the time, at least based on a decision that he issued in a separate case, it was a May 14 order, he had direct ownership in Ocean Energy, which is owned by Transocean Inc., which, as you know, is the owner of the Deepwater Horizon,
yeah.
Blew up. So you've got a problem there. He had extensive holdings in BlackRock, and BlackRock, as you know, is the biggest shareholder of BP.
By far,
the most prominent investor in BP is BlackRock. Now, there are some provisions in the law that might be able, if that's a mutual fund, to point to that one and maybe escape, but he can't escape the others. And the relevant statute said that the judge shall disqualify himself in any proceeding in which his impartiality might reasonably be questioned. And among that, he also has to disqualify himself if he knows that he or his spouse or a minor child in his household has a financial interest in the subject matter of the controversy.
But getting rid of the stock then, Ernie, on the day of, doesn't that remove the financial interest?
Too little too late, in my opinion, because what we're talking about is the code imposes a duty on the judge from the moment he gets the case. In fact, it says a judge shall inform himself about his personal and financial fiduciary interests. So he had an obligation the moment he got this case to look to see if he had any conflicts. And if he learns that his decision is hopelessly conflicted because he was owning the stock, he didn't have to make a decision right away. What he could have done is recuse himself and have the case reassigned to another judge.
It doesn't mean
that the motion is going to be denied or granted. It means that a judge who doesn't have the conflict should make the decision.
And if he didn't think there was a conflict, if he didn't think there was a conflict, why did he bother to sell it in the first place, whether it was on the day of the ruling or not? Okay, we got less than a minute here, Ernie. In your opinion, is this an impeachable offense? And have you heard anybody else calling for impeachment in this case?
Well, I think it is an impeachable offense. It's the only way that you can remove a federal judge. Otherwise, this man's on there for the rest of his life, and he's been there since 1983. I've seen, I think, one other blog item calling for his impeachment. I've seen nothing in the mainstream media about it, and so far no member of Congress has stepped forward to do the right thing. It's rather rare that a federal judge gets impeached, but the impeachment process is to preserve the integrity of the judicial system, and I think that, quite frankly, he has compromised the integrity of the judicial branch of government by what he did.
We'll follow this case. We'll check in after Thursday's hearing. Ernest Canning from BradBlog.com, our senior legal analyst. Thank you, Ernie.
My pleasure, Brad.
All right, brother. We will have a judge who is not to be impeached, Judge Vic Rolfe from South Carolina, who supposedly lost to Alvin Green in the U.S. primary down there, the Senate primary. He will join us in the next hour. Problems with the voting machines? Yeah, I think so. Brad, in for Malloy.